All right, here we are. So, let's open it up for questions then. And see what is front and center that's confusing you, or, even feedback input like what Lisa and Ramon just shared about the caching on the website. That's important stuff that helps us on this end because we don't use it the way you use it. And so I don't know these problems are there unless you tell me. And, I think we get them solved and we don't. So thank you for the input. So, let's open it up for a little bit and see what.
Can I just, oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Ramon.
So this is it might be a very stupid question, and it's kind of the hatha yoga question. People ask why do people do poses and why do people do that? But what is the purpose of the pranayamas? Like what is I know how the yoga, what my understanding is to get your body ready for the energy that the stuff that you're doing is going to produce. What is the purpose of the pranayamas?
Well, I would say let's back up just a little bit because they have there's 8 limbs of yoga, right? And this is answering your question. The 8 limbs of yoga, you have the yamas and niyamas, which are the things that you stop doing because it's always easier to stop doing something than to start doing something. So you stop lying, you stop cheating, you stop, being violent, you start that. Then you start being, attuning to an ishta. You start learning what it means to be content. You start these other practices, right? And these are really pivotal. We'll talk about them at some point to balancing our inner world. Because Kriyananda used to say, all this meditation stuff, you really need to get your life in balance to benefit from meditation. But meditation is what helps you get your life in balance. So it's this circle. You start meditating, it helps get your life in balance. The more in balance your life is, the deeper your meditation is going to go and more effective it's going to become. So on some level, all of us are still every day, all we're doing is getting our life in balance. We're getting our mind in balance. We're getting our heart in balance. We're getting our body in balance, right? And so then once we've gotten the yamas and the niyamas, then we move into, asana. I believe asana is third. Is that right? Because where we need to deal with this physical world. This physical world is what we're dealing with every day. We have a physical body in a physical world. And so when we do hatha yoga in my perception of it, would be interesting to see what Agnieszka or Lisa, who are yoga teachers, would say. Bringing the body into balance so that we can continue to walk up this 8-step ladder, even though it's not really a ladder, but we kind of put them sequentially. If samadhi, which is that ability to be completely, so completely present and connected so that you really are experiencing your oneness and the joy and the you're experiencing your true nature, which they tell us, and you've all tasted it, is deep, deep, deep peace and bliss, right? And there's an all-knowingness. It's like there's a knowingness. Well, to experiencing that, you need to be able to sustain your attention. So to learn how to sustain our attention and awareness of all of that, we meditate. So meditation is preparing us for samadhi. But in order to meditate and to dive and deepen into these subtle realms and be aware, we need concentration. So before we can really meditate, we need to be able to concentrate. To concentrate, we need to be able to have some balance within that emotional, mental world that we live in. And so we with pranayama, pranayama helps us to balance the subtle energies of our body, but also to become aware of them and activate. Pranayama activates the prana, and the prana is what we, is what, I'm choosing my word here. There's several coming to my mind. Prana is what sustains us. So pranayama isn't just about breath. It's not just about being able to breathe in one nostril, breathe in. It's about the prana of the breath. We are learning to sense it and feel it and follow it and allow it consciously to purify, to balance, and to feed us. The prana is what we live by. It's not oxygen. Prana is what the breath is bringing us. And I think, like I said in that other class, you will feel the difference in your body. You will feel, it literally shifts your vibration. Mm-hmm. And I don't have a better word for it, but if you have no prana, you can't concentrate. If you have no prana, you can't meditate. If you have no prana, you can't get into samadhi. So each step of this, I probably missed one in there. Each one of these is preparing you for the next one. It's preparing you for the next one. So the asana is third in this, we need them all, but when we do it in this eightfold, the eight steps, because it's that fundamental. If your body's not in balance, you can't sit. And we need to sit. Let's go right back up. We need to sit to meditate. Right? So we get our mental and emotional world. We start to bring that in balance, and we've got to get the body in balance because we've got to be able to sit. But Hatha Yoga is more than just, it's opening the chakras. It's really, it's beginning to tune us into the energy body. The poses, at least the system that I know the temple teaches this way. I don't know that all schools of yoga do it, but your poses are designed to literally open up the different polarities in the chakras, right? So that you are moving the energy, which is why the shavasana at the end is so important. And what is the energy? It's the prana. So the Hatha Yoga is, it's like it's waking us up. With pranayama, we are learning to consciously control it and move it through our body. And I think I've missed one in here. Does anybody know the eight steps? Did I miss one? Which one?
Sense withdrawal after pranayama.
Oh, pratyahara. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Which sense withdrawal is what helps us turn inward. Yeah. So thank you, Agnieszka. Hold on one second. Was that enough of an answer, Ramon?
Yeah. And just so you know, the reason why this came up is, you know, as I'm doing this class, you know, folks ask, you know, as they're going through their stuff, they want to get into meditation, and we had a discussion on Friday with some folks, and I was trying to explain, you know, like you said, it's very difficult to explain this stuff. So, and I don't want to mess. And I'm always like, look, the caveat, I'm just learning. I'm, you know, we're always learning, but I'm giving you my experience of it. And they asked me, and I was kind of like, you know, I kind of know the answer. I know that where you just, it's not because I'm just doing it, right? Like you said, I'm feeling the benefits of it and I'm feeling the energies. I just don't even think about why I'm doing it anymore. I just do it, right? So, it was just that. But yeah, that answered my question. Thank you.
I sometimes find that these things, it's like, it's easier to just have somebody do one and see how it makes them feel. Yeah. You know, it's like, do sipping breath. Notice how you feel. Do, you know, e-mantra. Notice how it quiets your brain. And one that's easy to, if you just want to demonstrate quickly for people, is bee breath, which we haven't done, but it's really simple, where you just inhale. You close off your right nostril so everything is through the left, and you just inhale through the left and make a B sound, like, so it's like a chanting in the head, right? Just keep going on and on and on. But afterwards, if you stop afterwards, almost everybody, there's a calmness that comes to the mind and the body, right? So it's like a demonstration of what is pranayama. What you have done is you have, first of all, you're breathing through just one channel, which is the left side of our being, is the more the subtle energy, the mental energies, okay? Not the stuff physical that you can touch. And we're breathing in just through the one channel. As we exhale through that channel, that sound we're making is vibrating the, I can never remember, I think it's the pineal gland right there at the center of the head, right? In other words, it's vibrating that chakra, which sends energy out to the whole body. It affects everything else, right? And so it not just quiets the mind, it has an effect on your whole being. There are a couple of traditions where this is like one of their main techniques. And so we're working with the breath, with the prana in the breath, to calm the mind and nourish the body. And so it's a simple one for people to do, and they can experience for themselves. After just a couple, there's a shift. There's a shift. So next time someone asks you, have them do bee breath and see, you know, and they'll laugh. They will do this. And so it's actually fun with you. They'll go, and they'll get all tweaky because it tickles, you know, and so.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. April, what were you going to ask or comment?
I just was like, I talked about the 8 steps in Hatha yoga, and I was curious if you could just rename them, like, or
say. Yeah, I can. Before I do, though, let me ask Agnieszka if she wants to add anything to the pranayama discussion. Because she, when you're in a yoga teacher, you study all this, you learn all this, but I'll be honest with you, I've gone to yoga teachers because when I was in my program, first program with the temple, it said I was supposed to be doing, Kapalabhati or Bhastrika or something like that. And it said, go find a yoga teacher and ask them. Well, I went to yoga teachers and nobody knew what the fuck I was talking about. And so the temple teachers know. So I would be really interested to see if Agnieszka has anything to add to the pranayama discussion from her perspective as a yoga teacher.
Well, I'm not very practiced in pranayama, but some. But I think the simplest answer is that asana practice and pranayama practice prepare your physical vehicle for those higher voltage energies that will be working, that higher steps in yoga bring. And Karen talked about, we talked about Ida Pingala and Sushumna, right, the center's channel. So the asana practice, as you work with the body and work on alignment, you're kind of neutralizing asymmetries and imbalances in your physical vehicle. So when the prana lifts, when it shows up, right, with the practices, it goes straight up rather than going through the left or right channel, making you either a little, you know, that you forget about, right, your earth life, right? You become very extremely emotional and all that. Or how does Kriyananda say it? Sterile logic.
Yeah.
Like super logical, like.
Cold, sterile logic. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's asana practice, to get your body so that center channel is open. So you're not, right. So we see this and, oh yeah, this needs to go back. So it's that simple. And I think with pranayama, if you're working with the mind again to find that not too far right, not too far left, but right in the balance. And I also remember Kriyananda said that, you know, when you think about it, we have only so much energy in our daily life. I can go to work, then I probably after work, I'm ready to go to sleep and black out. So the more prana we have, so that which pranayama does and asana, we actually have energy to go deeper, right? We have enough juice not to black out when we get there. Am I right, Kiran? Did he say it?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So that's, I mean, I can understand that, you know, it prepares your vehicle for other things that are not, that are more subtle, and it requires more attention, more energy, awareness. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
No, that's beautiful.
You don't have to put your eyelids off.
Mm-hmm. You what?
In that book yesterday, Pema talks about somebody who cut his eyelids off because he was falling asleep in his meditation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I was like, what? And then he learned that he just needed to get his energy up. I just read that in her book yesterday.
Oh, nice synchronicity. Yeah.
Anyway.
And so we will... I don't want to get into Ida Pingala, Sushumna, all the nadis, and we will talk in depth about this over the summer. But that's a great question, and hopefully that's enough. So April, let's go back to your question. What was it again?
Just the eight, those eight.
The eight steps?
Limbs, yeah.
The eight limbs. Yama. In other words, yama means control. So, yeah, let's just put it this way. This is the easiest way I have to remember it. Yamas are the things you don't want to do. You want to stop doing. The niyamas, which is number two, I have to say to myself, ah, see mama, niyama, see mama, do it, do those, right? And so each group has five things that you want to let go of. Five things that you want to cultivate. And the five you want to let go of are, I don't want to go into that today. I don't want to go into that today. It's, if I start listing all that stuff out, we're going to really derailed, but it's in Kriyananda's book, which you're going to be getting. It opens with these and his explanations are wonderful. And we will talk about it in the summer. So let's just say for now, there's the yamas, don't do this. The niyamas, do this. Pranayama, which is
asana.
Control of the light. Oh, asana, excuse me. Asana, which are your postures. Then pranayama, which is control of the life force. We call it breathing practices, but it's really prana, which is life force, yama, which is control, pranayama. And then we have pratyahara, which is sense withdrawal, which is where we can Yogananda used to say, turn off the five senses so that they're not grabbing our energy. And we develop the ability to turn inward and discover the inner, more subtle energies.
And what's that called again?
Pratyah, P-R-A-T-Y-A, Pratyahara, H-A-R-A. And then after that is Dharana, which is concentration, D-H-A-R-A-N-A. And then from concentration, and you know, a lot of people define meditation as concentration. You find that quite a bit out there that, and even in some of the mindfulness traditions, there's a lot of emphasis put on concentration, even in our mindfulness in plain English. And so this next thing between concentration, meditation, and samadhi, it's actually a very fluid, it's not a hard line demarcation. Each one feeds the other. Concentration is absolutely the path into meditation. Meditation being that ability to hold your attention and turn it inward. I don't want to define meditation. I was waiting that for the very end of the class. This is one definition. The concentration helps you to hold your attention. And then as you hold that attention, you can turn it inward to the subtle energy, the subtle realms. And then once you're in the subtle realms, you can choose to lift your vibration, lift your awareness so that the meditator, the object of meditation, and the process of meditation all merge. And there's the one, which is the samadhi, the one connected place together. And there's a name for this. You know, it's literally, they flow. Concentration flows into meditation, flows into samadhi. And it's rare that I'm just concentrating. We have some practice. I'm just concentrating. But what we do, it's this fluid back and forth between the three. Did that make any sense at all?
It did. So is number 7 is meditation?
Yes. Dhyana. Dhyana. Dhyana.
Oh, I thought that was number 6.
Oh. Dharana. Sorry. Dharana. Dharana.
Yeah, that's...
Wait, I don't know. Which one is which?
I think dharana is concentration.
It's concentration, okay. Yeah. And dhyana is meditation, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I did it wrong the first time, yeah.
So D...
Yeah.
And how do you spell that?
Dhyana is Dhyana. Yeah.
Y-A-N-A. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And then samadhi is where we're going.
Yes.
But it's not, you have moments of it. You have moments, especially where you taste the outer fringes of it. And so we don't want to get trapped into thinking that we have to have that moment. Because you have tastes of it all the time. And we want to learn to recognize them. Because that's what we hold. Feed what you want more of. Remember those moments, that moment you walk out in the morning and it's the smell and the sound and the air and the temperature. And you're just like, oh, that's a moment. That's an outer fringe moment, right? Maybe even not that far outer fringed. Hold on to those moments. Because the tendency of the mind is to remember all the other moments that were not so pleasant. And then we feed that part of our brain pattern. That's the pattern we feed. If you can and hold that. See, I want to go into the story I'm going to tell in the anxiety class next time. What time is it? Let's see. 9:35. It's like this. You'll hear the story again next class, next anxiety class. This is an old rabbinic story from the rabbis would tell in the Judaic tradition. And this story goes like this. There's a old man on a train and he's thirsty. It's hot. It's crowded. He's thirsty. He's thirsty. And he's going, God, I'm so thirsty. I'm so thirsty. I'm so thirsty. I'm so thirsty. Oh, and he sees a guy coming through selling waters and he buys a water and he drinks the water and he feels so refreshed and feels so much better. Ah, right. He arrives at his destination. He gets off the train. People meeting him go, so how was the trip? He goes, oh my God, I was so thirsty. I was so thirsty. Oh my God. You wouldn't believe how thirsty I was. I was sweating. It was hot. There was all these people in there. I was so thirsty. I was so thirsty. That's the story. That's what we do. He doesn't remember the water and how good he felt. And the rest of the trip was great because he got his water. He doesn't even remember the miracle that the guy came through with the water. What he remembers is how thirsty he was. And that's what he feeds. And that's what we do. You know? And it's just the way the mind is. And that's why we do this, because we're learning to go, wait, that moment, that's, I could feel like that. What if I carried that moment and every time somebody bumped my boat, right? Every time somebody, you know, the caching didn't work on the website and I had to go clear my browser 45 fucking times, you know? No, this feeling. And it's not about living in a rose-colored glasses world, you know, a reality that doesn't exist. You're tapping into a part of you that's real, that's there. That part of you that is connected, that gets it, that this is temporal. This isn't what's real. Those states you touch inside yourself where you feel so connected, where you can hold the vastness of, as we said, the face of God, right? The glory of it all and the horror of it all. Can you hold all of it with equanimity? That's the majesty of God. It's God is not. I mean, the Gita, this is this incredible chapter where the Gita is the story of Krishna, who is us. No, excuse me, Arjuna, who is us, being asked to fight a battle with his kinsmen for, that's, it doesn't matter at this point. And Krishna is his guide. Arjuna doesn't want to fight. He doesn't want to fight his friends, his family. He doesn't want to fight them. He says to Krishna, I don't want to fight. And Krishna starts teaching him about the reality of all of it. And at one point, Arjuna's drinking in these teachings. It's like boom, blowing his mind. It's a whole different way of looking at the world. And at one point, he looks at Krishna and he goes, okay, so really, if all of this is so, you know what? You know, really, who are you? Would you show yourself to me? Who are you? And Krishna goes, dude, you can't handle it. You can't handle it. You don't know. You really don't know. It's like Jack Nicholson, that moment where he goes, you can't handle the truth. Remember that moment in All for You, Good Man? You can't handle the truth. Krishna's saying to Arjuna, you can't handle it. Arjuna's going, no, no, no. I want to see. I want to see. And Krishna goes, okay. And he shows himself in his glory. And it's a beautiful description, but it's like, it's majestic. It's wonderful. It's blissful, but it's terrifying. And it's ugly and it's horrific. It's all of it in one. And what we're building to is the equanimity, the wisdom, the balance to be able to hold all of it and recognize that it's, and our hearts still be flooded with incredible love and gratitude. And awareness of the whole as the whole. And there is no right, there is no wrong, there is no good, there is no bad. There's just life in all of its wondrous wonder. And so Kriyananda called it the face of glory. It's not just, you know, unicorns and hearts and, you know, beaches and sunsets and, you know, no, it's all of it. That's samadhi. That's the one. And when you have those moments, you just need a couple. You just need one and you bring it back into this world. Samadhi is about, Kriyananda was really clear about this. You can't function from samadhi. Well, a few people can, a few of these great teachers, but for most of us, we taste it, we touch it and we go, oh my God, it's true. Ah. And we know something we never knew before. And we bring that back into our day-to-day world. And we're different. It's like, I don't know if any of you are into musicals, but that was my love before this. And there's a musical by Stephen Sondheim called Into the Woods. And there's a song in there where they go into the woods. And the woods is a metaphor for all this. And she comes out and she goes, and you know things now, many different things that you'd never noticed before. And throughout the whole musical, it's coming back and knowing things you didn't know. And they've changed you, but you bring them back. And that's what you're doing. You've gone into the woods here. It's dark in places. It's uncomfortable. It's scary, but you're going in, because when you go in and you face the giants and you face the demons and you do this work, you know something. And you will have the moment where you know, and you know it. And you come back and you're different. You're different. So samadhi is, you know, I keep talking about it like it's the end goal, but it isn't. Samadhi is the experience for you to bring back so you can live your life now with that knowing. Live your life knowing this, and your fear is gone. The horror is gone. The judgment is gone, because you get it. And you can't talk to a lot of people about it because they think you're crazy, right? So you don't talk about it except to your people in your Sangha. This is why your Sangha is so important. Because they're living now by the same rules you're living. You get it. It's different. Does that make sense? Any sense at all? Yeah, Lisa. Yeah.
I can see a parallel between the trance you're in before you lose a child and how you are out of that trance after. You know things now. You know it's different and you can't really talk about it, but yet you hold both of those. And then you have to learn how to hold both of those daily. It's the ugly. It's the beautiful. But you can't talk about it until you get with other parents who've lost a child. And it changes you and you look at everything differently.
Yes.
That's what it reminded me of.
Yes. It was beautifully said. Beautifully said. You have the capacity to hold both. You know both. But the rest of the world doesn't. So your heart is just filled with compassion, because it's like you just can't judge. They don't know. This is why there's the three things. There's attachment, which we often call hatred or greed. There's resistance, which is called hatred or anger. There's attachment, which is called greed or desire. And there is ignorance, which is where we've just forgotten. We've forgotten all this. And if somebody's forgotten, they've just forgotten. If somebody doesn't know, they don't know. There's nothing wrong with them. And there's something, you know, it can be beautiful to share what you know with someone who's ready, and if they're not ready, it's cruel. And it's cruel to expect someone to live by the rules that we are learning to live by, because they don't get it. So you're going to learn to speak two languages. You're going to be able to code switch. You're going to be able to speak in your group here and get the support you need to know what you know. But you're also going to know how to go. How do you talk to your kids? How do you talk to your spouse or your partner? Right? In a way that includes them, but you learn to speak their language. We don't talk about prana. We don't talk about karma. We say, hey, why don't you da da da, let me take the kids for a while so you can feel better. We don't say, go take some deep breaths and, you know, fill up your tanks with prana. It's like, why don't you go take a break, take a deep breath and restore your energy. Feel better. We just learn. We took a turn, didn't we? Yeah. Yeah. And I'm working on a handout. I won't send it to you till July, but I'm working on a handout that has this, the attachment, the resistance, the greed. And, you know, we break it down into two. We break it down into one. We break it down. Well, do we ever break it down into one? We might, but there's two. And then there's three. And then there's five. And you want to know these because they help you as you go through your life to go, okay, am I attached or resisting? Am I filled with dullness and ignorance? Have I forgotten something? And then sometimes we can, is this pride speaking? Is this pride working on me right now? Is this envy or jealousy? And you've got your five main pockets that you can look at the things going on in your life in. But when you're teaching or even just working with somebody else, you don't have to go into five. You can say just very simply, what are you resisting? What are you attached to? That's a mind-blowing thought right there, right? I mean, to just say all suffering can be broken down into attachment or resistance. My daughter she's in the car, you know, Natalie, who we're doing all this with. I said, well, honey, she goes, what's deeper, Mom? What's deeper after the, you know, I calm my body and I get my breath. How do I know what the cause is, what the source is? I said, well, what are you attached to? What are you resisting? What does that even mean? Right. And I say to you guys, you all know what I mean. This is a language now that you understand, right? But not everybody does yet. So I'm done. Let's move on. Anybody else got a question or something to add or a question? My mind is going, Karen, shut up. You've said enough. So I'm going to listen.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I feel like it might have been answered, but if you could reiterate it. I'm stuck with the neti, 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 like we're not our thoughts. It's not this. But I don't know how to contrast it or like think about it in the same way with like when we want to put our desires out in the universe. So are those thoughts too that are mm-hmm. not thoughts?
No, they are thoughts, but you're choosing your thoughts. You are not your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
You are what's aware of them. But there is something very powerful about choosing the thought. It's like choosing that aspiration, choosing what's on the other shore that you want to be pulling yourself towards. That kind of thought, there's wisdom to hold that thought. That's how you cultivate it. That's how you bring it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that answer it?
Yeah, I think that's I think... You know, I like to do a lot of contemplation and I'll be thinking about what's on the other shore. And then I'm like, so I'll be wishing, you know, desiring, but then I'm like, oh no, I'm not my thoughts. And I was like, what the hell am I doing then?
You are using your thought. You are using thought to power your course, to power your boat. You're using thought to direct your life, to direct yourself. And by consciously choosing a thought that is so much more better. That's my good English. So much more better than having all these subconscious thoughts running you without you being aware of them.
Okay. So sort of like conscious versus subconscious.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And what I would add to that is if you're holding a thought about the future, and I think we talked about this, but I'm going to reiterate it. It's important. I have found, and there's two schools of thought on this, right? One is detail it, think about it, really just create it, right? Really. But then you're getting trapped in the symbol. And what we want to do is, what is the feeling that I'm looking for? And then be open to how life is bringing you exactly what you want, but it's not looking like what you thought it was going to look like. This is so important. And it's a really important step is to recognize that life is bringing you what you want. You just thought it was going to look like X, Y, and Z. And so you're missing out on the fact that it's brought you exactly what you wanted. And so let me back up then. So neti, neti, neti is a technique to train us to recognize that we are the awareness, the witness that is having this experience. We are not the body that is having the experience. We are not the emotions that are passing through. We are not the thoughts that are passing through. But thought is your tool. And so we become aware enough to consciously choose the thoughts that are serving us to reach our goal. And the one thing I'm going to then do a little bit more, I'm going to tell you just a little story. I've told this story before. I'm going to tell it again because we don't want you to miss your goal. We don't want you to miss that you got there. And what happens is this was in the early 90s and I was doing a lot of work with kids at that point. I was at a retreat for all the teachers and they brought in a musician and he was very good and he was amazing at getting this room using music and to have these experiences and to open up and he'd have a singing along. He was really quite remarkable. And he was over at the coffee station. I was over there and I said, wow, this is just fabulous. This is great. And he goes, yeah, you know, and I don't know, we got to chatting and he says, yeah, but you know, what I always wanted was I just wanted to be up there, you know, sharing my songs with people and having all these people listening to my music. And what he was describing, what he wanted was a venue, an arena where he was the musician on stage and he had the arena, everybody listening to his music. And he was stuck in that vision. And what he was missing was he had exactly what he wanted. It was happening right there, right then. He had gotten there. He was there in the front of the room with us, giving us this incredible experience with his music. And he was traveling all over the country. He was in great demand doing this. Was he in, you know, the big arenas in Chicago and New York? No. Was he doing it in a smaller arena? And his dream had come true, but he couldn't see it because he was trapped in what it was supposed to look like. But the feeling of what he wanted to be giving and bringing to people was exactly what he had. It blew him away because I didn't even realize that. I just said, oh my gosh, and look, this is exactly what you're doing here. And he literally stopped and kind of went, because he was trapped in what it was supposed to look like. So hold the feeling of you what you want and then look for that. Do you know, follow what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that I took it a little bit left of what you asked, but it seemed pertinent. So
yeah, thank you.
So that was a good question. And it was actually a very good question. Yeah. Got a few more minutes. Anybody another question? Agnieszka.
Thank you. It's somewhat similar, only I guess coming on the other side of neti. I've been, there's a lot of, I'm in the process of packing and moving and thinking about the future. So when I sit in the morning, I just sit, but I find my seat and then I'm gone. You know, boxes and uncertainty and all that. And so I sit with it. And then I'm trying to, I'm very grateful for the steps that you gave us for sadhana, that there is actual
structure.
Go through the structure. Thank you. So I try to go through it, but with very little luck. And then at some point I'm like, well, I'm just sitting here wasting time. Maybe I'll just get up and go and pack or do something else. So any advice on that?
Yeah, get up and pack.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, so I love Kriyananda, man. He was so, so friggin' practical. He's like, okay, so if you sit down for your meditation and all you're sitting there is think about all the things you still need to do. He says, get up and do them. Mm-hmm. Just get up and do them. The day will come where even if there's stuff to do, you'll be able to sit and meditate. And meditation doesn't have to be 20 minutes. It may be that the most effective meditation at a time like that, right, is to just anchor into your body, have a feeling of, okay, here we go. What's in store for us today? I'm going to greet it with this place of center. And that took all of 20 seconds. And then you go pack and you pack. And the packing is your practice, right? Being present with each thing, the complex set of emotions that are coming through, right? The change, the grief, the memories, all of those things, and giving each one the attention it wants. So you're packing with real presence and awareness and not running from anything. I mean, if you have time, if it's a smash grab pack, that's different, right? But if you have time, then that's your practice right there. That's your practice.
Thank you.
And I just want you to know that there are the teachers who would say it absolute opposite of me. Just so you know this, they would say, sit. That's what they would say. But that's not what Karinanda said, so I'm telling you.
That's what's in my head. That's why I needed to hear the other way.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to suck all that back because I said that with so much emphasis. I said the sit with more emphasis than I said, get up and pack. And as you're packing, feel it. Be with each memory. Be with each piece. Be mindful of what you're doing, but mindful of what's passing through you. That is your success. That is your meditation. Oh, okay. Yeah. Thank you. That was a great teaching for me. Wow. Okay. Ramon, yeah.
So just one comment on the books that you recommended we read. Just Autobiography of a Yogi, just if you choose that one, it could be life transforming. So I just want to put that out there. It's one of these books that, you know, that can really, really change your life. So just, it's a long book. I actually, I got the book and I did the audio. I listened to the audio on my way to work every day and just kept doing that. Like I did that twice. And it, then you get the book and you can reference it. So if you want to do that, that's the way I did it. It was cause it's a long book and it's like 500 some pages and it's one of these books where if you kind of want to listen to or reread what you just read because you may not get it the first time you read it. So, but it is one of the most out of all the books I've ever read. And I've heard just from numerous people, it is a life transforming book. It can be, not that it will be for everyone. It can be a life transforming book. So.
Well, I'm going to thank you for saying that because I can't say that. I feel exactly like you do. It changed my world. It changed. I almost missed a plane because I was so immersed. But because I'm teaching and I want you to be you and to find you, I don't want to lay that on anybody. So I'm just so grateful you said it because that is how I feel. But I also know that there are some people who start it and not into it at all, which is fine, right? Which is why the Dalai Lama is there, which is why Dan Harris is there and Michael Singer is there. So
yeah. I've given it to a few people and they read chapter one and they're like, yeah, that's fantastic, Ramon. Thank you. It's like, okay. I said, all I ask is you don't throw it out. All I ask is that you keep it and maybe years from now, you know, just open it up again and see if it speaks to you. And then if it doesn't, then put it away. Just don't throw it out. Just put it away somewhere and you don't have to, I've just given people books like that. And I've said, here's a book I think may benefit you, but if it doesn't speak to you, just put it away. Just don't throw it out. That's all I ask. So.
Yeah. April.
Can I just ask a question about this handout that we got last week? The one about
Which one?
The resistance and attachment one.
Oh yeah, that's the one. I'm working on a bigger, more expanded version of that for your. Oh, I did send that one out.
Well, I have it. I don't know how I got it.
Can you hold it up to the screen? Let me see it. Let me see what's on it.
Yeah, you talked about it during class.
Okay, yeah. But go down. What's underneath it? What does that say? Shame. Oh, yeah, that's the overlay. Yeah. Oh, I did condense it. I condensed it into that. Yes. That's really more for next term. It's just to put it out there for you to just kind of, some of you have done all the different workshops. Some of you, you know, this is sort of newer material, but I just wanted to just kind of float it out there. Just float it out there.
Yeah. Okay. I thought so because you touched on it, but there wasn't any specific, like, use that handout for this purpose.
Right.
So
no.
Maybe we're just kind of getting.
It's just exactly. And that is what I'm expanding on that we'll have for you as part of the July series. So we'll be working with the emotions, the energy. We got a lot to do in 5 weeks in the summer. So, but we have a retreat too. Thank you for that question. Cause a lot of these details, you know, I'm not one of those teachers that sits down here and has all the details listed out. It's like, and so it's a little bit of a flaw in my teaching style. And so it's nice when somebody asks the question to help me remember to say the details. All right. Nothing else? Okay. Then I have a question for you guys. We want to do a round of one-on-ones over the break. So would you rather do them right away or would you rather wait till before we start?
I think it depends on everybody's schedule. Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be tricky even getting everybody scheduled, maybe.
Well, my thought was to do it the week, you know, there's a July 4th week and there's that holiday on the 5th, right? But then sometime between that's the 6th and that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, or that Tuesday, somewhere in there, right before we start it up again. Or we could do it right after this session. Like I could try and schedule stuff for not next week maybe, but the week after. So let's do this. Close your eyes. Close your eyes. Everybody just close your eyes. And if you would prefer to do it right after within the next week or two after this class, raise your hand. If you would prefer, think about it. Sorry. Okay, go ahead. Raise your hands again. Some of you are a little slow on the uptake there. How many of you would prefer to do it before we start the next series? How many of you don't care? All right. Okay. There we go. All right. We'll do it. We'll do it that week of July. And I'll have Darcy start arranging them with you. And if you're on vacation that week and you can't do it, then we'll find another time. Okay. But I think it would be good at this point to just kind of do some one-on-one time. And I like the idea of doing it after you've had some time to digest a little more and kind of assimilate it and stuff like that. So, all right. Wow. Okay. Should I take a look at my plan for the day? Let's see what I thought we were going to do. Let me get my Excel spreadsheet up here and see what was in the plan. All right. All right. We're doing that in the group class. All right. Then let's come back here. I'm going to bring up the handout about the thoughts. Well, I thought I was. Hold on. Remember, there's a handout I gave you that you may not have downloaded it, but it had the different techniques for working with thought. And let's just go over that briefly. to see if when you look at these, you know what I'm talking about. We can label or note our thoughts. Can you see this, guys? Is it showing? Okay. So the labeling technique we did in that class, sensation, sound, breath, and thought. Is that... I can't see everybody because of the way they make you take you over into the side view. So I can't see everybody. Is everybody, I say that label, sensation, sound, breath, thought. You have a sense of what that means.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes.
Labeling your thoughts, past, present, future.
Yes.
You can do that during the day, right? You don't need to do these sitting down in meditation. This is the kind of stuff you use, right? We're going to be working with pleasant, unpleasant, neutral during the anxiety class. We'll be working with that a lot. When I say to get out of the story, when we say labeling, noting the story, does that mean something to everybody?
Unfortunately, yes.
Okay. All right. Okay. So we, between all the different studying we've done, we've covered that. Okay. And then...
Is it the story we attach to our feelings? Is that what it is? Or
yes.
And recognize that we're doing it.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
It's the story we attach to our feeling. It's the story, the thoughts have taken us off into the story. Okay. And pulling ourselves back, and we can just notice, oh, I'm in the story. Let me come back into the moment or back into the sensation. Exactly that. Yes.
Thank you.
And then this idea, you know, this for many people, for me, the first time that was like, oh, wait, that thought might even be true. It might not even be true. There was such a beautiful freedom to help me really recognize that, oh, I'm not my thoughts. These thoughts are coming and going. Just because they're here doesn't mean it's even a true thought. Is that something that everybody, when we talk about it, looking at a thought as true or false, that there has some sense of, yeah, I know what you're talking about, Karen. I'm seeing nods. I'm scrolling through. I found my scroll button. Everybody good on that one? Okay. So the other technique we have is to neutralize a thought, right? Because we never want to, that's not true. Shit. Oh man. Who was it who was talking to me yesterday about stop? Who was that? Was that April? Is that Brenda? Who was it? Wasn't any of us here? Maybe it was Gina. Okay. All right. I'm going to stop sharing for a moment. Okay. We talk about shit. This is what it means to be in the middle of Karen's mind stream. Okay. We say over and over and over again, we don't want to suppress a thought. We don't want to push a thought. We don't want to ignore thoughts, right? We're learning how to do this dance between recognizing it's a thought and letting it go. Recognizing it's a thought. Is it a useful thought? Is a thought that's serving me? If it's a thought that's serving me, let me keep it. If it's a thought that's not serving me, let it go. Not so easy, right? Not so easy to necessarily let a thought go. How do you let it go without suppressing it, repressing it, ignoring it? Yeah? So... those techniques I was talking about are techniques for what we would say just neutralizing the force field around a thought. We're not suppressing it. We're not repressing it. We're not letting it go. But before we go into those techniques, there is one technique I have taught. Somebody just a few days ago told me they'd used it because it was really, really helpful. And what it is, who was it? You're in it. The thought is going, Geminis, listen to me carefully here. The thoughts are coming and coming. And it's not a thought that's serving you. It's not a thought that's helping you. It's you, but it won't leave. There is a time, there is a moment where this is totally effective and acceptable. It's not repressing. It's not repressing. It's being really firm with your thought, and it's looking at the thought and just doing this. Stop. 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 Okay? I rarely, rarely teach that kind of boom to work with an emotion or a thought, but there is a place for that technique. And I forgot to write it on this paper, so I'm going to have to add it. Except I almost don't want to add it, because you've got to make sure you're not suppressing it. You're not repressing it. You saw it. You've seen it. And you're telling it, stop. Is that distinction really clear? It's literally like your two-year-old is about to put their hand on the grate in front of the fireplace. And you need to stop them. And you go, stop. Stop. Or if you train animals, there's a point where you got to be firm, right? So there's a firmness to it. Kathleen.
So if it's something that you've like worked through, you've looked at it, you've journaled on it over and over, and it shows up again, that this is where you're saying to use that, just right? But as long as you've done the work on it, because they do it, there is like, I have a couple little things like that, that I have, you know, looked up here, looked over here, looked over here, looked over here. And it's like, why, what is still coming, you know, every so often.
Every so often. And so, and the response would be, you've looked at it. You see it's there. Yeah. You're not pretending it's not there. But it's a habit.
Yeah.
And it's time to stop.
Yes.
Stop.
Right.
Which is the same version many of you have heard me tell this story so many times, is when I was learning to not be angry, to not just explode at my kids, right? And my same Natalie that I'm here with would bait me, and she has admitted to this day. She's actually told me as an adult, she would just, because she knew if I lost my temper, she had won. And she wanted to win. And she would walk away literally with this, gotcha, you know, and she admits it. And so what I would do is I would literally, the anger, it would just be my mouth. I just wanted to just like, and I would just literally say to myself, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this. It was a habit. I'm not doing it. I'm not. And I would walk out of the room going, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. And it doesn't take that long of doing that. And the habit realizes it's stop. It's time to stop. So stop is the symbolic word for the energy of approaching a habit with the firmness that says, I'm not going to do this.
Right.
I'm not going to do this. We're done.
Right.
I've been married to you for 40 fucking 45 years, whatever it is. I'm done. You're gone. Right. Done. Yeah. Kathleen, that was a great, I'm glad you said that, because it's a thought habit.
Yeah. And I'm just, you know, you're lit from her book, When Things Fall Apart, right? It's like, and I, looking at everything as a gift and trying to, you know, and things come up because they're trying to tell you something. So, but sometimes I just think that, no, it's not trying to tell me anything anymore because I have looked at it so much. I mean, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there is something more to it, but I feel like it is a pattern.
I think if it's a pattern, if it's habit, that's the key.
Yeah.
Stop.
All right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And if the rest of you have any insight into this as you use it, please let me know, because truly this was not a technique I was taught. I didn't learn this until, I mean, we'd already moved back to Oregon. So it was sometime after 2017. I mean, so it's a relatively new technique for me, right? And so I don't know, understand all the nuances of it. I just knew it was freedom and it freaking worked to look at a thought and go, stop. And the key is it's not, we've saw it. We're not ignoring it. We're not repressing it. Just stop.
But on a neural pathway, it makes sense to stop that path, to stop.
Exactly.
Train it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So I'm open. As you, like Kathleen just said, if you discover things as you're doing this, let me know, because this can become one of our techniques that we teach. I'm just reluctant to teach things until I'm understand them completely, which is.
Well, yeah. And I think it's pretty advanced, because the newcomer tendency would be to stop everything that's uncomfortable.
Right.
Right. Like, that's clearly not good. That's not a message for me. That just thanks, you know? So we're going to
yeah, that's the not going there. It's not going there. It's not that.
Yeah.
It's like, I've been there. I've gone. It's like your 2-year-old every week, or your 4-year-old, my granddaughter. Gigi, I'm thirsty. Gigi, will you tell me a story? Gigi, will you sing me a song? There's a point where it's like, sure, sure. And then, Rowan, it's time for bed. The songs have stopped. The stories have stopped. The trips to the bathroom have stopped. The water has stopped. It's time for bed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm actually thinking about this a lot in my quest right now to get some food issues back under control and just health back under control, that I think this could be very helpful in that realm, because I'm in a very habit pattern of food for comfort, you know, sugar for everything. And sometimes you have to step in with something kind of firm. I have to have things to replace it with, but I don't know. I mean, I'm looking at the stuff that's deeper. I'm just in those habits of I sit down on the couch and I have crap, you know, or I don't have the routine of exercise. So it's like, it's because I think I'm working on the other stuff that's underneath it, but it's got to be something to retrain.
There is. So here's what I would say is if you're sitting, because that's what I do. I mean, shit, I don't do a lot. I have very few comforts besides, you know, I mean, I meditate and I love it, but it's like, I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't smoke pot. I don't know. There's other stuff. I don't even have time to go play much. So what I do is I eat for comfort, and my favorite thing is potato chips. Right. But so when I do it, I'm just really not, I honor it. It's like, this is my enjoyment. This is my comfort. This is my little comfort moment. And I have my chips and I honor it for exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. I don't eat my chips feeling guilty or bad or so the only thing I'm going to add to this, Brenda, is those moments when stop doesn't work, is then just own it.
Yeah.
I'm doing this for comfort, and get the comfort from it. Take the comfort from it, right? And you might find that you don't need to eat as many as you did before, right? But it's acknowledging that you need the comfort, and that's the win. And that discipline piece, moving into stop around those things, you will let me know. Let me know how that works, because I've never been successful with it. So I'd be curious to see if you can find a way to use that stop in a kind, firm way. Keep us posted. That'd be great. Great information.
Yeah, because I think what I've gotten into is I'm comforting all the time. Like, oh yeah, I need this, you know.
Yeah, why? Of course you are. Hello? Of course you are, Brenda. Of course you are. There's nothing wrong with comforting all the time. When a baby is suffering from bad gas or their teeth are coming in, until the tooth comes in, they need comfort. Your mom is dying. And it's an arduous process. You need comfort. That's okay. It's 100% okay. It's 100% okay.
My pants do not agree.
Well, I'm sorry. Get new pants. You'll go back. It's not permanent. It's not permanent. I know this goes against everything you've been doing for all these years, but I just want to sit here, guys. This is about being kind to ourselves. I mean, if we can come out of this, and Steve is kind to that mind of his, this mind we love so much. If Ramon is kind to this, that very tender, sensitive part inside of himself, right? That he can't always show. If Kathleen is kind to those parts of her that there's so much regret around, right? If Lisa is kind to all those parts of her that were just so, at least I'm using the word traumatized, and I mean it in a kind way. You know, that's what we need. We need that kindness. You cannot have too much kindness. There is a religion called kindness. Right? That's the Dalai Lama. He says, because Buddhism, you know, it's not a religion, Buddhism. He says, my religion is kindness. Kindness will change you. It will change the world. Can you be too kind? Yeah, I suppose you could. There's a phrase that says, kill them with kindness. But you only try and kill them with kindness when they're just such assholes, right? So please, please be kind. You deserve comfort. We all need comfort and kindness. You know, and maybe your kids will grow up with a whole different sense of kindness. And wouldn't it be wonderful if their generations of children, they had to learn how to be less kind because we discovered that there was a limit to kindness. Yeah. But right now, we don't have that. There is not enough kindness. Right. The world needs more. Okay, where are we? 10:23. Oh my God. 12:23. Was this of any use though? Was this beneficial to just take time to do this? Yeah. Yeah. So my head is not in detail land. You can go to the website. The handouts are all there, whatever it is. And it's all suggested for the break. It's suggested. The most important part for this break is that you digest. Browse through the books. Keep them on your bedside table or by the toilet and just browse through them, you know, look at them. But digest. And we have the anxiety class. We'll be learning a lot of stuff in there. That's plenty to do right there. I mean, tomorrow night, there's a bunch of techniques coming out, you know, even if you just did that or not. Kathleen?
You have the recording so I can see that before tomorrow.
The recording, unfortunately, Darcy is, she's going to try and get them posted today.
Okay. All
right. She's at the memorial service. Her aunt died. And so she's down with her family this weekend. Okay. So we tried to get as much up ahead of time as we could. But she's going to, after our class today, she's going to get our recordings up and she's going to get the anxiety class recording up.
Okay.
So you'll be able to watch it. Yes. Yes.
Okay. If I still don't have that, you know, I didn't get the link for the anxiety class or any of the information. So should I email Darcy? What should I do?
Don't email Darcy. No, email me. I'll try and handle it. We want to give her the time. She's going to take a little time out to do this for us. April, it went to your Meditation Mama email.
Yeah.
Weird. I checked that too and I didn't see it. Maybe it just is, you know, late. So I'll check again. I'll let you know.
Check again and then just text me and I'll email it to your Gmail. Yeah. And Lisa in Oregon, did you get the emails with the links?
Yes, I have them.
You have them.
I attended on Saturday.
Okay. And Ramon, you're going to let me know if you get any great insights into how we can solve the caching problem, because there is a caching problem.
I will look into it.
Okay. Thank you. Then, that's all the detail in my brain for. But if you have any issues this week, Darcy's on vacation through Friday. So email me and I'll try and fix it. I used to be able to fix all these things, and now I've given it to jobs to other people, and it's like, oh shit, how do I do that? But I'll figure it out. And let's just close with a meditation. Okay? And so we're going to find our seat. You're going to feel the weight of your body. Feel your hands on your lap, wherever they are. Consciously soften your neck, your shoulders, any tightness in the torso. And then bring your attention to the breath. Breath flowing into the heart. Breath flowing back out. And what if for just this moment we thought of the breath as two lovers? Two lovers who meet right there at the heart center. And the breath that's flowing in is the lover that can't stay away and is bringing itself to the beloved right there at the very center of the heart. And you are the beloved of the breath that cannot stay away, loves you unconditionally. And each breath in breath is this deep, deep love, bringing its kiss, its caress to you, the beloved. Life loving you. And what if we could accept this breath as the deepest love possible, flowing to us unceasingly? And all that is ours to do is to allow our heart to open and accept this love. To soften and accept the love. It's not about deserving. It's not about worthy. It's about just softening and allowing the love carried by the prana of the breath to make itself known. And what if with each exhale, you simply surrendered and allowed yourself to give back that love, to respond to that love? And just give that love back as you exhale. Love coming in. And then loving right back. And let's take this pattern. Love flowing in, loving you, you giving back, loving back. And let's breathe Hong Sa together for just a few moments. With the in-breath Hong, your attention is in the heart center, feeling the love. As you exhale, you're giving yourself back, completely surrendering. And with that, let's release all technique. And just rest for a moment in this space, whatever you found of love. And let's close with our Om Shantis, beautiful ones. Take this love into your Shantis and just say it gently, just a gentle, gentle closing. Inhale. Om Shanti. Send it to each other. Shanti. Feel it coming back towards you. Shanti. May you be blessed, dear ones. May you be blessed, and may each of you be triply blessed, so that in the days and the weeks to come, you will truly be an even greater blessing to others. Namaste. Namaste. And thank you so much, so much for sharing this path with me. I am so honored to be part of your lives. You're amazing, amazing beings. Goodbye, everybody.
Right. See you again. See you all again.
Guys.